Hello, welcome to another episode of the Jericho Comedy Podcast. We're getting closer and closer to getting back to doing what we love in front of our brilliant audiences again. But if you're missing that, then this podcast is the next best thing. I'm Connor McReynolds. For today's episode, I sat down with the fabulous Celia AB and Mr. Saturday Night himself, Alex Farrow. Celia is a Jericho Comedy regular. She is super funny, and we had loads of fun in this episode. Later, you're also going to be hearing some book recommendations from our lovely friends at Blackwell's in Oxford, and you'll even hear a clip of Celia performing live at one of our award-winning comedy nights. But right now, let's get straight to it. Here is the fantastic Celia AB. All right, I am here with Celia AB. Hello, Celia. How are you?
Hello, Connor. I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for being here. It's really lovely to have you on the podcast. I'd never had the pleasure of gigging with you until last night at one of our lovely driving gigs at Toad. How was that your first drive-in experience?
Yeah, first drive-in gig, first gig in 4 months.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So a lot of firsts.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's it was my first gig in 4 months. Very exciting
wow.
stuff.
How did it feel? How did you feel before it? Were you nervous at all?
I was so nervous.
Were you?
I was so nervous the whole day before. I couldn't really sleep the night before either because it felt like a... It felt so foreign to me after four months. But about an hour before the gig, I started getting really excited.
The idea of
getting back on stage. And then within probably the first minute or so, it all started coming back.
Yeah.
It just reminded me why I love it so much.
It was so much fun. I mean, you had such a great set, and it was so lovely to see you up on stage. It was loads and loads of fun. How differently did you have to approach performing to cars and headlights as opposed to performing in a bar or a pub where you can actually see people properly?
So I kind of try to approach it like a normal gig, which I don't know if that is the best thing to do, mm-hmm. but I tried to get in as much feedback as I could. So asking questions, making sure that they cheered when I asked them to cheer. But that's mostly because I was craving the validation of knowing that someone was there. I also focused on the faces I could see. So there was mm-hmm. this car just in front of me that I could see their reactions.
Oh yes, the lovely red sports car with the soft top. Yeah.
Yeah, I really focused on those two.
They chose their car right for a driving gig, didn't they? They looked smart.
I think they bought it for the gig, actually.
We are being joined, Celia. We are very fortunate. Mr. Alex Farrow is right here with us. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Connor.
So, listener, you should know where we're recording and what the circumstances are in which we're recording. So we've been talking about our driving gigs at the Oxford Artisan Distillery. It's a beautiful place, the Toad Distillery. And we've been running our driving gigs here. It's great. Celia was on last night. I was on last night. Mr. Saturday Night, Alex Farrow, was hosting last night. And poor Alex has come in and he is drenched to the bone because this is our second driving gig of the weekend and it's pissing it down. How are you feeling, Alex?
Wet. Very, 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 very wet.
It's so we're doing another gig tonight. Both of you are on. I have the pleasure of not having to perform tonight. How do you think the weather's going to affect it for you guys?
Well, I was sitting in my car earlier, and have you ever been on a Zoom gig yet you've put the mistiest filter on? Have you ever been on a Zoom gig? It's like, I want the softest focus possible on these comedians.
Just spray your deodorant on the camera or something.
Yeah, we're talking like butter on the webcam here. I mean, it is going to be an interesting look.
It's chalk and cheese because it was lovely and sunny last night.
Yeah, it was. It was really lovely. I mean, I'm quite excited about tonight.
Yeah?
So much could happen. It's like, how often do you get the thrill of not knowing whether or not you'll be struck by lightning?
I know, never. There's dying on stage and then there's actually possibly dying on stage.
If I do get struck by lightning, it'd be a good USP to take to an Edinburgh show.
That is Edinburgh 2021 sorted, isn't it?
Yeah. It's me being struck by lightning.
It would put a whole new twist on your punchline, she's electric. We got to get that in.
Cecilia, as I said, I only got to see you perform for the first time last night. You've been on my radar. Alex has always spoken so highly of you when you come to Jericho. You moved to the UK 3 years ago?
5 years ago.
Oh my goodness, how time flies.
It's okay, I wasn't expecting you to be at the airport. I've been in England since October 2014, so coming to 6 years now.
Okay, wow.
I moved to Birmingham I wasn't meant to be moving. I was meant to be there for about 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And then I just never left, and no one's kicked me out yet.
And that is something that not a lot of people say of Birmingham.
I know, I moved there willingly, which is...
What was the attraction to the UK?
So I had very, very extended family in Birmingham, and I was meant to really stay with them for 3 weeks, and then very frankly overstayed my welcome. I think I just fell in love with it. Also, I was 19 years old, so when you're 19, there's no consequences of how long you're staying somewhere.
Sure.
So I just kept extending. I kept getting a job, or I'd meet somebody. Mm-hmm. And then about 3 years ago, I started doing stand-up, which is the main thing that's keeping me here. And also just fell in love with Birmingham as a whole. I think it's a lovely city.
It is, actually. It gets a really hard rep, but I actually like Birmingham. The only times I've been... It's got nice canals and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to do the boring fact, but the boring fact is always...
I can't wait.
Yeah, the boring fact about Birmingham is it has more canals than Venice.
I think I've heard this before.
I know, that's why it's a boring fact, and I couldn't stop myself doing it. You know, it's like, I think it's when you hit my age, you suddenly become a dad, and it's like, you know, dad facts, do you know what I mean? Whenever you go somewhere, it's like some military battle or like some well-known facts. Like, yeah, we know, dad.
Do you know that somewhere there's like Italian comedians doing a podcast? You're from Venice. Here's a fact about Venice. We have less canals than Birmingham.
Celia, have you gigged in France?
I've never gigged in France, which is... it's not that they're not letting me. I don't have like a dark
You're cancelled
backstory.
You're cancelled in France.
Yeah. I know, I've not been exiled. I've never gigged in France, although I am due to do my first gig in France in 3 weeks' time.
That's very exciting.
I know, in English.
Oh, no way.
I've done a couple of French gigs, which are very fun, very different, obviously. But I really like the... I think that English is a great language for stand-up. And I like the idea of starting in English. And just being... I felt that for me, it was more of a challenge to try and come up with jokes where I couldn't fall back on references. I had to actually come up with... things that could be translated. But then the aim is to eventually do as much stand-up in French as I do in English, just to try and diversify as much as I can.
I mean, that's what they say about like language learning, isn't it? That you've really mastered a language when you can make a joke in it.
Do they say that?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. If you can make someone laugh in another language, then you've kind of mastered that language.
I think I started that rumor, to be honest. Just come up to a guy and just pass it on.
Alex, you speak a bit of French, don't you?
Yes.
Un petit peu?
I do remember I used to say un petit pois for a long period of time. People say, do you speak a little... which is a little P, which is not funny or indeed correct. People just politely nod through and it's like, you speak less. A little less than you think.
I've got one stock phrase. I studied French A-level, but this is like 15 years ago and I've forgotten everything except for... I have this one phrase... Je m'excuse, il y a 15 ans que j'étudiais le français au collège et à cause de ça, j'oubliais beaucoup de mots, mais après un petit tas de vin, je me souviens plus.
That's good.
Well, thank you. That's what people I say it to think. And then they think, because I say that with confidence, for listeners who don't speak French, that means, I'm sorry, it's been 15 years since I spoke French or studied French at school, and as a result of that, I've forgotten all the words, but after a little glass of wine, I remember more. And I say that and people think, oh, he said that with a degree of confidence.
Yeah.
And then they speak back to me in French. And then I have a moment where I just have to repeat it and say, je suis désolé, il y a 15 ans que je...
Do you know what's
and that's
lovely?
All I got.
It's lovely because it's the first time I hear French with an Irish accent, which means that you make it sound so friendly. Just so, so, so friendly.
Or threatening.
It definitely is to an Englishman. French with an Irish accent is sort of stirring something in my heritage.
It's
like
so interesting.
Primal fear.
To me, the Irish accent sounds so friendly and like... happy. Like,
oh my goodness, you don't know a lot of Irish history then.
No, you just sound so happy. It's like, let's have a little dance. That's what it sounds to me.
Yeah, I think I feel like I have to be very friendly in England to make up for generation before me. Because
yeah.
apparently we have a bit of a reputation.
Was it the kerfuffle?
It was the great kerfuffle.
The great kerfuffles. I've read some history.
Well, Celia, do you think these gigs that you're doing in France, are you going to have to change like some of the references and stuff for a French audience?
I've kind of, the problem I've got now is that most of the references I've got are UK-based, so I can't take them to French gigs. So but then I can fall back on French references. It's a whole different skill because there's something that happens if you speak a language long enough, you forget your own.
Oh, wow.
Like, so I forget French words a lot, and which means I can't quite speak English, but I can't quite speak French either. So I'm like half lingual. I can't quite speak either languages.
That's
crazy. So it's interesting because when I try and write jokes in French, I have to get my brother to make sure that the grammar's there.
Yeah.
But then I can't. So in English, if I mess up, it's like, oh, she's French, what is she like? But if in French I mess up, it's like, are you okay?
That's such an interesting thing to have to worry about in a gig.
It's so niche, there's no forums about it. I'm here to share my pain. Au chocolat.
If you have also forgotten your native language, please contact Jericho Comedy and we will connect you with Celia. Celia, what was your first gig like in the UK?
Oh, so I got very lucky. It's been a string of very lucky things that happened. The first gig I had was, I'd met a couple of comedians on the circuit. Before starting comedy, I was just hanging out with them on a friendly basis.
Yeah.
And I was doing that thing that comedians do, which is, I'll do it one day. I'll just keep writing.
Yeah.
And I was really hungover. I was in a cafe. And one of the women that I used to hang out with saw me writing. And she said, right, I'm tired of you saying you're going to do it and not do it. So in 3 days, you're coming to my gig and you're going to do 5 minutes. And then I didn't sleep for 3 days. And then I started reconsidering. I was looking at my notes. I was like, this is not funny. I probably wrote about an hour of really shit jokes. Wow. Like, it felt like a montage of me just like sweating, throwing stuff in the bin. Just keep writing. And then I had a glass of red wine before the gig, which I've never done after, which is so
weird. Really?
Like, I thought I was Stuart Lee. And I went up with a glass of red wine like I was doing my Edinburgh preview. I was booked for 5 minutes. Ian Stone was on the lineup, I remember that. And I had my little piece of paper. I went on, I got one laugh, and I was like, this is amazing. This is like, this is amazing. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And you could tell on my face that I was having this realization because I was far too happy, and the audience was like, all right, keep going. It's like, you've got to keep going. So I had my first joke, then I kept doing other jokes. It went well at the time. Obviously, like, looking back, I'd probably be like, this was an okay gig.
Sure,
by the time, I was like, crushing it. And I went off stage. And then instantly started introducing myself as a comedian. Because that's all I wanted. I wanted to be like, I'm a comedian. This is what I do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then...
Changed your Facebook thing. Have you ever thought of that when it goes... CAB works at stand-up comedy. It's like, that sounds bad. It sounds like you're trying.
Stand-up at stand-up comedy
always
makes
that's
me...
that's the other one as well.
CEO at stand-up comedy, that was my name. And then I didn't... For 3 weeks, I was on a high of like having done a gig.
Yeah.
And a woman actually came up to me afterwards and got a picture with me, which at the time I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to be crowd surfing by next week. And then I realized she just takes pictures of every comedian. But at the time, what a confidence boost. And then my second gig, I died on my ass. And I think that's just like how karma works. So that one was my first gig. And I think that had it not been a good gig, I don't think I would have done it again.
Oh, wow.
So I was very, very lucky.
That's really interesting. And so, Alex, what's your first memory of seeing Celia performing?
Well, I met you before... Was it before you started stand-up?
Yeah, we met in Birmingham.
So we met through the maverick that is Ben Kane. Ben, how would you describe Ben Cain? Ben Cain is a man who appears not to be trying to be a comedian, but is being an exceptionally successful one in spite of that. He's easily one of the funniest people I ever knew at school.
Yeah, he's the funniest person I've met.
This is your friend you've told me about.
Yeah, I've told everybody the secret that is Ben Cain. Can you go see Ben Cain do stand-up? No. Is he the funniest man in comedy? Yes.
He's just somebody that has the timing of somebody that's been doing stand-up or some kind of comedy for years.
Oh, don't you hate those people?
The thing is, as well, he's good at loads of different things. Yeah. And so he's like this he's like this person that is mythical. And so I think we met because he used to do...
Rafiki's Cuisine.
Rafiki's Cuisine. And the night I met Alex, I was dressed as Andy Kaufman. And you had paint on your face, do you remember?
Why did I have paint on my face? And what colour was the paint? It was...
This is the moment Alex gets cancelled. This is so exciting.
You were dressed as the Joker. It was a Halloween night. It wasn't like...
Had I come as the Joker?
I think you had...
That's good of me. And it's somewhat of a relief as well.
I think I was dressed as Andy Kaufman and no one got it. Of course they wouldn't.
I do remember now. It was Halloween. Yeah. And I'd come as, the Joker. There we go.
That would make sense for you guys to be in fancy dress if it was Halloween.
Yeah.
About Ben and Rafiki's Cuisine is it wouldn't necessarily have been unusual to be in fancy dress.
I know.
So I don't really know how to explain what Ben does. Ben, he does so many different things. So Rafiki's Cuisine was sort of one time a pub quiz, but then just kind of morphed into absolute madness and it became very hard. Basically, you turned up to Rafiki's Cuisine and you had to complete it. and quite what it was, you never really knew. And it was really cult-like. So it's sort of, there used to be questions involved by the end of it. God, there wasn't. There was,
was dancing. Banana rounds.
So the banana
rounds,
we had to make stuff out of bananas. Did we have to do that at the Halloween one?
I think we did. I remember that they had this game called Sink or Swim. Okay. Which would be, I think at the top, they would give you five objects. You had to guess whether or not they would sink or swim. And then at the end of it, they would have a massive, thing of water.
Oh, like a big basin type thing?
Yeah. And they used to play this song that I associated with.
But when I watched it, I mean, this makes it sound very tame. So everybody is, there's blazing, techno, right? There is, flashing strobe lights. There was another person who did it with Ben, who, bless him,
Stuart?
I can't remember his name. Is it Stuart? He would be in some form of undress increasingly throughout the night. There would be smoke, there'd be,
it'd be the highest production pub quiz.
Didn't somebody come from the ceiling or something like that? Or was that a body or something like that halfway through single swim?
And they used to have this doll, I think, at one point. It used to be the maddest. And when you say cult-like, it used to have a following in South Birmingham in Moseley where I think it was on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, this was too much energy for a Tuesday. And I walked in, I couldn't believe it. It was part club, part comedy gig. I don't know, so it had elements of Taskmaster in it, but much more chaotic and frightening.
It's so hard to describe as well, because it's something that it would be the first time I saw it, but keep in mind this is the first pub quiz I've ever been to, because we don't have pub quizzes in France.
A typical British pub quiz where we take a body from the ceiling
round
to techno music.
Now we sink a man.
And I remember that Ben used to describe it as that he hated pub quiz and he wanted to make it fun, and it was the maddest thing. And I remember they've actually made a business out of it, of those kind of events now, and they just had this talent for coming up with fun games.
That's
and they could
bonkers.
Be so cutting as well, like you could be in a game and they'd be like, "You're shit," but because you like them so much, you'd think it was hilarious.
He's a deeply charming and kind man.
Yeah,
Ben. Really know it immediately as well. It sounds, I think, probably a bit aggressive or something like that, but it really wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's most recently, the thing that amazed me was Ben had been doing on his Instagram story something called, what was it?
TDFI.
Top deck front
row,
something like that, where he just filmed himself on buses around Birmingham. And you're like, that sounds pretty boring. somehow they were absolutely fascinating. Anyway, for was it good like 2 years or whatever, he was the face of National Express. Yeah. National Express Adventures picked him up off his Instagram stories and was like, yeah, we're just going to send you around Britain and can you just like report on it? And so they'd send him to like the cheese rolling and like shin kicking contests and stuff like that, just on a bus. And
this is a very cool way for you guys to meet.
And he was, and so we met through that, and I think... Yeah. I had started doing stand-up probably, I was probably just like a couple months in.
How'd you start? Yeah.
And you had been going for a while and we were talking about it. And then I think a few months later, I was like, can I come to Unite? And yeah, my material changed a lot between when we met and who I am now. So Alex very kindly let me do a year of doing gigs at his gig with really... blue
stuff. Oh really? Yeah.
which was
the wage gap.
The wage.
Oh, the wage gap?
Oh no, no. That was I don't want to think about it.
I can only imagine what that is.
It was, I don't want to say it again because it's not Catholic. But I used to do very blue stuff because I thought I was like, I can't be censored. It's things that didn't even make me laugh, but I just wanted to get a reaction.
Oh, you just wanted to shock people?
Yeah, because I think that a lot of people, when they start stand-up, you just want a reaction.
It's a quick way to get a reaction, isn't it, to try to be the most shocking person in
the room. It came from insecurities completely. It came from being insecure and also knowing that, oh, if I do something that I don't like, that isn't me, if it doesn't work, it's not me. That they don't like. It's the jokes that I'm playing this character of this, like.
So do you remember when that mindset changed then?
Yeah, it changed when it kind of, like, funnily enough, I never told Alex that, but it kind of changed when I started doing more stuff at Jericho because I've never told you this, because I would come to your gig and I'd see people laugh at stuff that I thought was funny and be like, I can't believe people are laughing at this. And it's not blue and it's clever and it's funny and it's like, and I remember like thinking, shit, I need to be more like that. Because this is not, what I'm doing is not who I am, and it actually doesn't make me laugh. But if I do that, and also an interest in like watching more and more like one-liner comedians, that's something that I love one-liners.
Yeah.
Even if they're like horrible, bad one-liners, just there's something about the theory of coming up with a good one-liner that I think is so fascinating. The science of it is really fascinating to me.
You seem, having only properly met you yesterday, but just talking to you after the gig last night and seeing before we started recording this, you're rereading David Mitchell's book and that kind of thing. You seem like a real student of comedy.
So I think, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. I used to do music before I did comedy. I did the music and my brother is a... music teacher, my dad is a musician, so I approached comedy the same way one would approach music theory, where I would see it as, right, there must be some kind of science to this, and I must find out. But I love finding out how and why a joke works, and I think that it's a bit, there's something kind of, it's probably a bit autistic about it, but I like seeing someone set and going, oh, this works because of this, and this works. I like seeing something and trying to understand why it works that way. And as far as students, I do watch a lot of comedy, but what I tend to do is I just watch the same like few comedians. Yeah, yeah, I love David Mitchell. His book is the funniest thing I've read in a while, and I'm very much I see because I didn't go to uni, so I've got all this like brain space.
I'm the same, and I did go to uni. I did performing arts, so nothing went in. So I've still got that space.
But like, I do approach it like as a science to it. It's because it probably makes me feel good about doing it as well.
Yeah, yeah. Alex, this is right up your street as well, isn't it?
Oh, like the craft of it. Yeah. I mean, I love nothing more than deconstructing, reconstructing, breaking apart jokes. I love it. Like my favorite reaction. It's often the case, isn't it, when you see something really, really, really funny and a comedian watches it, instead of laughing, they'll go, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Like, that's the, you know, like, if something was really killing me, sometimes I'll be like, oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
And it passes through the laughter barrier into, like, some other space where I'm just like, oh, I mean, it's like,
fuck, I wish I'd thought
that's
that.
Gorgeous. That is beautiful.
It's because you've done the math in your brain of going, this is not a hack. Wow. Yeah. Then you go, you didn't use the classic, like, premise, and then, oh, he twisted that, oh, and you just go through this, and you go, it's like, it's almost like music when you see someone get do something that's excellent and that you didn't think about. That's why I love, like, one-liners that are a bit odd and, like, stuff that you never thought about.
Yeah.
Like, when we talk about, like, comedians like Josh Pugh, William Stone, like, that kind of comedians that come up with, I like to call them modern one-liners.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's an element to it that is still, like, attractive to someone who doesn't like the old, take my wife. But
yeah.
it's a stick around for the jokes. But, like, I think that there's an element to it that is, it's clever and funny. It's not just, you don't laugh just because you get it.
Yeah. Have you got an example of one of those jokes?
So,
can you think of them?
One of my favorite, like, Josh Pugh jokes is, I'm going to butcher it completely. But it's like he went to see a, I think it's a job counselor, is that what you call them?
Mm-hmm.
Who said dress for the job you want, but later on realized that it was a plumber dressed as a job counselor. And just, like, I love it when it's a great joke, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I like your version of it. That's
your
really funny.
So good.
But, like,
having known the original, the retelling of that's beautiful as well.
But, like, I like it when people switch stuff and surprise you. Because the science of a joke is most people laugh because they're surprised. But when you're surprised and it's like, it touches a part of your brain that has never been there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, I don't know, like, those kind of jokes are, I love jokes so much that I respect storytellers, comedians a lot.
Yeah.
Because I think that it takes a specific type of skill that I don't have. And I think that it's very hard to keep the attention. Mm-hmm. But because I need validation constantly, I need to have jokes, just so I know that, oh, they're listening. And I'm not boring them to death with the story of me going to Aruba. I've never been to Aruba. I don't know what it's like. But I love jokes for the science of it, I think. And
that's really cool. I think that really comes across both in your material and from kind of chatting to you.
Oh, thank you.
It's really cool. Guys, I would love to keep doing this, but for two very important reasons, I'm going to cut this conversation short here. First of all, we've got a gig to set up this evening in the pouring rain. So if you were an audience member at that gig and you didn't enjoy it, then just sort yourself out. But also, we have to go to a little message from our lovely friends at Blackwell's. Lovely, fantastic Charlie from Blackwell's in Oxford.
All the Charlies.
Best bookshop in the world. They've got all the Charlies there. And lovely Charlie Bush has put together a little thing to recommend some funny books for our wonderful audience. So here's Charlie with that. Check it out.
Few things are so inclined to cause jealousy as somebody wheezing with laughter, tears rolling down their cheeks, clutching a book. No other reaction, not tears or laser-like attention, is more likely to induce me to find out what they're reading. Right now, we could all do with a laugh. Some books are funny all the way through, and some more serious books hide passages of hilarity that induce wild guffawing and howls of laughter. P.G. Wodehouse is the master of comic writing. Forgive the endless golden era of English upper crustiness, and you find that every single sentence is so perfectly constructed to amuse and uplift. In contrast, other books, like Olga Tokarczuk's Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead, was for me so unexpectedly and darkly humorous that I was completely taken aback, and all the more delighted. The Brilliant and Forever by Kevin McNeill is a tragicomic novel with satire, absurdity, and a literary prize-winning alpaca. A Scottish island is host to a literary festival, assembling a varied and recognisable ensemble of writers. The book brilliantly skewers the pretensions of the literary establishment, its festivals, prizes, and self-reverence. It's absolutely ridiculous and ludicrously funny, while also wise and tragic. Writing funny is hard, damn hard. Worthy scholars of literature may marginalise or trivialise a book that is funny. Critics and serious readers will look down their noses. We know they're missing out and failing to recognise what huge skill it takes to make readers laugh.
All right, Celia, now it's time for pressing questions. This is the part of the podcast where the fun stops and the interrogation begins. So I'm going to ask you a series of challenging, thought-provoking, intense questions, and all I need from you are some honest answers. Does that sound okay?
That sounds very exciting and frightening.
It does. That is also a very legitimate name for this section of the podcast, exciting and frightening. All right, Celia, question one. Do you believe in ghosts?
I think that everyone believes in ghosts, but doesn't want to admit it.
Really?
I was thinking about it because I like to go around. I'll go around with the aura of someone that's like, I don't believe in ghosts. That's stupid. But part of me kind of is like, if there is one that shows up, my first thought will be, of course.
I knew it.
I think that it's like, I'm saying I don't believe in them, but I'm also terrified of them. So if there is one ghost, I want to be like, I'm sorry for invalidating you. I don't want them to exist, but if they exist, I want them to know that I like them very much, and please don't hurt me.
Alex, you're a man of science. Where do you stand on ghosts?
I've got anything fun to say about it. Nah. Nah.
Next question.
Nah.
All right, Celia, do you know the 13 times tables?
The 13 times tables?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, that's a good answer.
No, maybe it's an English thing. What's the 13 times table?
13. Oh, what is a times table?
Yeah, what is it?
Oh, it's when you multiply something. So like two times table is 2,
yeah.
4, 6, 8, 10.
Oh, God, no, I don't.
That's just me showing off, by the way.
You're a man of maths.
I can only count till 10. No, I am very bad at maths. I am a slave to my iPhone. I haven't had to multiply numbers since I was 15 years old.
I don't think anybody's had to do maths in their head in the last 15 years, have they?
No. I think that some people do it to boast. Like, I mean, there's an iPhone here.
I refer back to my 2 times tables because I fucking nailed that earlier.
Really?
We all heard it. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. I can go as high as maybe 30 with it. I don't want to brag, but yeah, I'm pretty good at it. All right, Celia, have you ever broken a bone?
Yes, I broke my right, forearm.
Oh,
when
no.
I was little, and I broke it in the stupidest ways. Kinder Surprises used to have these little piggies in it. And I was 8 years old, and I was collecting the little piggies, and I put them on top of a wardrobe, and I came back from dinner with my parents, and I was so excited because I thought I had the same piggy. And I was like, they're going to miss. And I stood on a chair, and the chair fell. And then I broke my bone on this arm.
Oh, no.
And then I think I milked it so much with my parents that I think I was meant to keep it for a month, kept it for 3 months. And I had all my friends sign it at the time. And it was I quite enjoyed the experience. I liked it when they cut it. I felt like a really cool kid. But I did break a bone.
Were the pigs the same?
Do you know what's terrible? I don't remember.
Oh, no.
I don't remember. I mean, it's not like the hospital, I was like, let me see. I must go home.
You wake up and say, where's Piggy? Piggy. Shh, Piggy's fine.
But I do remember how excited I was to find out.
Yeah. That's great. Alex, what about you? Have you ever broken a bone?
No.
Cool.
These questions are really not doing anything for me there.
I'm surprised for a man who does so much crowd work and you come across people who just block your answers. Right now you're like, no ghosts, bones.
When it's stuff personally about myself,
That's true.
I tend not to talk about myself
a
huge amount
person,
on stage.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like I'm keeping secrets from people. So I find other people more interesting. You know, in a conversation, it's like, oh, tell me more about you. And it's like, well, no, I'm boring. I know about me. And I do the same thing with crowd work. So if I'm MC a gig, I want to know about what other people have broken. I haven't.
That's true.
The only things I've broken is hearts.
Hey-o!
Note Celia, to the podcast, important edit. Please, please cut that out.
Celia, you've been in the UK for a few years now.
Yeah.
Do you have any strong feelings about Heston Blumenthal?
About who?
Heston Blumenthal. Do you know him?
Heston Bloomingdale.
Blumenthal. How would you describe him? The dickhead chef.
Well, you've done it, haven't you? I mean, like, I think he's a... Yeah, he's sort of like, you know, in the pub where somebody's come in and it's like, oh, James has come in, but he's got like a kooky hat on.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, James, where's the hat from? It's like, oh, it's so kooky.
His approach to food is very much like, yeah, steak is good, But imagine if you blew steak bubbles instead.
I have an opinion about chefs.
Oh, good. Okay. Let's get them all.
I have an opinion about chefs. I don't like how chefs are taken around by Netflix all around the world for stuff, and how I think that I don't know at what point in the 2000s we've decided that chefs were interesting people. Like, I think that it's great, but I don't think there's anything. They're always mean. I feel like they're always mean.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, I'd like to see a show of someone that hates food going around trying food. Because, of course, they like it. But, I don't understand why, like, Gordon Ramsay, I was going to say bless his heart, like, he doesn't care.
We know he listens to this podcast,
yeah,
and he'll be very
upset. Yeah, he's a
big
fan. Yeah. Buy the merch. But I feel like Gordon Ramsay and all the chefs, like, I just wish that there was shows where we take, like, people who work in, who aren't chefs, like sous chefs, take them
like
somewhere.
Fun.
Like, I don't know. I think it comes from the, like, the French cuisine thing and, like, the whole gourmet thing. I think is very, I get why they do it, but sometimes it's like, just chill out, lads. Just
take a day off, have
like,
a burger.
I don't want it to be so elitist, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it feels
that
very
does
like,
make sense. If you feel like that about chefs, then you would fucking hate Heston Blumenthal. I recommend never coming across him. You've done well to this point, and I feel bad now that I've introduced you to just the concept of Heston Blumenthal.
Yeah, I've actually avoided him.
He's a monster, and continue to avoid him. Celia, which Hogwarts house do you think you'd be sorted into?
Oh my god, I'm about to out myself.
Oh.
So, this is terrible.
You're the bad one, aren't you?
So,
are you a Slytherin?
So this is worse. This is worse. I am terribly sorry. I'm not a Harry Potter person.
Oh, that's okay.
I watched one Harry Potter film, and I tried reading the books, and I couldn't get into it when I was a kid. And obviously, is it J.K. Rowling is now a horrible person?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I was ahead of the curve.
You were right, turns out.
I knew it the whole time. But if I had to pick, I think that Hogwarts is the one where that Harry Potter's in, isn't it? Which one?
No, Hogwarts is the school. Gryffindor. Hogwarts is the school.
I feel like I'd like to be the... I'd like to think I wouldn't be in any of them. I'd be like...
Yeah, you'd put the sorting hat on. It would just be like, nah,
I'll be the
mate,
hat.
Get out.
I'll be the hat.
I like that. That's a good answer. Celia, do you think you'd enjoy hosting the Oscars?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, they thankfully haven't asked yet. But next year, I think that I probably would be too terrified of hurting anyone's feelings. Like, I don't think I'd be like Ricky Gervais. Like cutting and stuff. I also think that I wouldn't just the stress of finding out what to wear and stuff would be too much. I think that if the opportunities came, I am open to it. But I think I would. I'm not a huge fan of MCing. I'm not very good at it.
Okay.
So I could probably do 10 minutes of hosting the Oscars, and then I'd let them do the whole thing. that's what
good.
I do.
Alex Farrah, what about you? Would you like to host the Oscars?
Not again, not after the last time. I mean, I'm always getting asked to host things like the Oscars. And I'm like, no, actually, what is it? On a Saturday? No, mate. Downstairs at the Jericho Cafe. I'm raising money for Oxygen Mind. That's what I do, mate.
That's how you plug a gig. Celia, do you have any phobias?
Oh, do I have any phobias? Yes. I used to be very, very terrified of spiders. I think that's quite a basic one.
Oh, yeah.
I am terrified of rats and mice. Absolutely terrified of
them.
Are you? I think that they're scary creatures. I feel like they have a plan. I have it's a horrible phobia of mine. I moved out of the house after seeing one mouse.
Really?
Back in Birmingham.
Oh, wow.
Just simply moved out. I mean,
in fairness, houses shouldn't really have mice. I think that's kind of legitimate. But what do you think the mice are going to do?
I just feel like they're sneaky. And I don't like the fact that I can't catch them. And there's so many of them. I'm very terrified of like rodents in general.
That seems legit. That seems fair. Yeah. Alex, have you got any interesting facts about rats and mice for us?
What, do you want dad facts? Real facts?
Dealer's choice.
Well, the boring dad fact about rats, isn't it, is that you're only ever like, and you always hear a new like meterage, right?
Oh, yeah.
In London, right? You're only ever like, the first time you hear it, it's like, you're only ever 20 meters away from a rat. And then like the next time you hear it, it's like, you're only ever 5 meters away from a rat.
Yeah, I've heard.
And then it's like,
last I heard was 6
a rat
feet.
Is always physically inside you in London, right? People always inflate the extremity of it.
Yeah. It's the same in Oxford, except you're never any more than 6 feet away from a PPE student in Oxford.
It's true. Everyone's doing PPE.
Everyone's studying fucking PPE. Celia, my final question for you is, what do you think Hollywood legend Meryl Streep is doing right now?
Oh, hold on. I'll just send a text. Good old Meryl. I think that Meryl Streep is probably... she's probably in her swimming suit lying down on all of her Oscars and Grammys and everything she's won, as she does every day between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. I think that she is probably like, she's probably smashing the role of being Meryl Streep right now. She's probably like so good at it.
She's disappearing she steals into the role it. Of Meryl.
She
yeah.
steals it. She's really so good at being it. And I think that she's probably looking very like graceful. I feel like I can't imagine her not being graceful.
It's so difficult because even when she played Maggie Thatcher, you just look at her and you're like, she is a class act. Like,
love her work.
love Maggie.
What about you? What do you think she's doing?
Yeah.
Meryl Streep. Jeez, I haven't got a fact about Meryl Streep. Nothing. You're only ever 5 meters away from Meryl Streep. There's more Meryl Streep in Hull than there is in Venice.
She's recording a podcast and she's being asked about Alex Farrow and Celia Abe.
What do you think the Jericho Comedy guys are doing right now? Well, there we go. Now we know a little bit more about what Celia thinks about a few things. Now, we really wish we were back in one of our lovely venues like the Jericho Cafe or Common Ground or Jericho Tavern putting on awesome live shows, but obviously that's not possible at the moment. So instead, sit back, grab a drink, close your eyes, picture yourself back at Jericho Comedy on a Saturday night and relive a terrific set from our wonderful guest, Celia Abe. Here she is, recorded live at Jericho Comedy.
Hello everyone! Yay! I start every set as though it's my comeback tour, so it's really nice to be here. Hello, it's really nice to be here. Thank you very much for coming. Quite excited about seeing the Celia Abe in the flesh. Okay, my name is Celia Abe. I am originally from Paris, France, and I moved to Birmingham willingly. So, just get a couple of things out of the way. I moved to Birmingham for one reason. I think there's no one funnier than anyone that is from Birmingham. The funniest thing I've ever seen didn't happen in a comedy club, didn't happen on the telly, it happened at New Street Station about 10:30 in the evening. There was a really drunk guy, and he was singing, "She's electric," to a vending machine.
There is a light and it never goes out.
Funniest thing ever seen. Now, I am checking my dress, guys. You know the dress?
Yeah.
It's a pregnancy dress. Not pregnant. You've got a dress for the job you want. And the job I want is maternity leave. More of that, please. More of that. I've been wearing this for 18 months at work and I haven't clocked. Okay. Bit of admin. I shall get the admin out of the way. I am from France. I'm also half Algerian. Bisexual, hey. And my family's Muslim. Ah, give me a box and I'll take it. Everywhere I go, people try and sponsor me. The weird thing is about doing comedy and being all those things is that I think that if you're a white guy wearing a tartan shirt, you get to just go on stage and talk about how much you hate your wife. But if you're not that, you have to talk about the fact that you're different. Now, I didn't realize until I had a meeting with a producer the other day. That's the one. That's the one. And he said, "Celia, you've got it all. You're French. You're bi, you're Muslim." I said, "I'm not Muslim." He said, "You're Muslim." Then he said, "Celia, it's for BBC Three." And I said, "Assalamu alaikum." Then he went, "Here, put this on." It was an LGBT flag as a burqa.
structure. It's very slimming.
It's the lines.
Very, very slimming. Now, the last time I was in Paris, I was coming out to my mum. Now, my mum's Muslim, but she's lovely. And, and she's a bit clumsy, like she means well, but she can be a bit clumsy at times. Like I said, Mom, I'm bi. And she said, why? So I did what anyone should do. I should educate her. I said, Mom, the reason I'm bi is because of the vaccine when I was 8 years old. Now you go off protesting, Mom. She's adorable. She does a lot of things like that. Like the other day, I was opening up to her about body dysmorphia. Just a quick question, do you all know what body dysmorphia is, yeah? We're all insecure. So I said, Mom, I've got body dysmorphia. And my mom, once again, trying to be helpful, said, Celia, to fight body dysmorphia, you need to take a long, hard look in the mirror. She does that a lot. She does things. She says things that she doesn't realize are jokes. Like the other day, she was like, bailiffs, you've got to hand it to them. Then she said, no, seriously, I have not paid the bills. Let's go. We've got to.
Now, it is time for a game called Fact or Fiction, where we have to decide whether what's being said is unbelievably true or total bullshit. We'll each take turns to state one fact, and the other person has to guess whether it's fact or fiction. 1 point for a correct guess, and 1 point if you fool your opponent. Highest score wins. Does that make sense, Celia?
Yep.
All right, let's do this. You're our guest. We're going to let you go first.
Oh, wicked. So, the reason Google Image exists is because of J-Lo.
Because of J-Lo?
Oh, wow. She's gone real cryptic with it as well. That's a really good... like
That's
way
really
to do
good.
This, isn't it? Just say something that might be true or false, but don't give any explanation at all.
Yeah.
That is quite clever.
I mean, J-Lo, she's very photographed.
I was actually fooled by the rocks that she got. And so I actually had to go on Google Image Search to see that she was still Jenny from the block.
She used to have a few photos and now she's got a lot.
This is absolutely outrageous and I love it.
I'm surprised I remember those lyrics. I think I'm going to say fact for this, but I'm very gullible. Alex Farron, what do you think?
I'm going to say false.
You're saying false. Fiction.
Oh, well, if we want to get philosophical about whether all things fictional or false and all false things are fictional, I can do this. We can be realism or anti-realism about such statements.
Oh man,
but
next time we play this game, it's going to be called Realism or Anti-Realism. All right, I'm saying fact, Alex is saying fiction.
So it is true.
Yay!
So there was some sort of ceremony. Shit. I think it was like the Grammys or something. And people were trying to Google her outfit on that night so much that but there was no pictures to see, options to see pictures. So they've created it just for that.
That's mad.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. As if she hasn't got enough going for her, she gets Google Images as well. All right, Celia, the dot above the letters I and J is called the crumpet.
Oh, that'd be so cute. I hope it's true.
It would be cute.
The crumpet.
The dot above the letters I and J. Alex Farron was shaking his head.
I don't think it's true.
You don't think it's
based true? Based on the fact that in French it's not...
It's not called the crumpet.
Yeah.
Or are there crumpets in France?
Not really. That's
maybe you guys have so many better pastries. Why would you have crumpets?
Or maybe like they've just hidden crumpets from my life in France. I've had a very sheltered life away from crumpets.
My guess would be that the word crumpet would be either French or Latin in origin because of its E-T ending. Mm. Now, and I'm basing this on you now, Celia. So if the dot above the J or the I in French is not called a crumpet, because you would know because you've got accents and cedillas and stuff like that, and if it's not called a crumpet... But the word crumpet has a French or Latin origin. It would be probably the same. So I'm going to say that crumpet is just something to do with your love of toasted savoury snacks. Connor.
What a long-winded way. You're absolutely right. I really like crumpets, and that is fiction. But the little dot above the INJ is actually called the Tittle.
The Tittle.
The Tittle. Yeah, aww. That's its name. It's a very cute name.
Are you sure it's not the title?
The Tittle.
It could just be a typo on the QI Twitter account. All right, Celia, time for your second fact. Oh, so you're... It's one all. One all. Very exciting. So what's your second fact?
So my second fact is that in France, there is a tradition... once a year, mm-hmm. of you get your whole family around your house and you have like a pie on the table.
I love it.
Somebody goes under the table and decides who gets which piece.
Someone is under the table deciding who gets which piece of mm-hmm. pie. But how can they see the pie?
So somebody's like, who's this one going to? And then the person goes, oh, this will go to Connor.
Ah, that's brilliant. Can you be chosen more than once?
I don't think you can.
That's a shame.
I don't think you can.
That's
because
a real shame.
I think that once you get your piece, it's...
I guess you should just be happy with
about,
the pie
it's
that you
got. It's about fair sharing, isn't it? This yeah. is why France is such a socialist nation,
isn't
it? Like, even on the dinner table, like, one must blindly like share out amongst the fraternity.
Let them eat cake, but let them not choose which slice of cake they're getting.
It does sound very believable to me.
It does sound believable. I like it. I like it a lot. I am going to say, because I want it to be true, I'm going to say fact.
Does sound very believable, but I think it might be very believable, but it's not actually French. I think it might be very believable, but it's like another European nation. That's my
name
guess.
Another European nation.
I can't do it anymore. It's been a long time since 2016. I've just forgotten entirely about the mainland.
It stops at Dover.
So I suspect that it's a sort of a trick because it's very believable. I think it's super believable, but I think it's not French, so therefore fiction.
Well, it's all true.
Yay!
Oh,
and it's called the King's Party, La Fête des Rois, and it's once a year, and
that
it's the most
fun.
Delicious cake you'll have in your life. As well.
Is it a specific kind of cake?
It's marzipan-type pie, oh. And it's the most delicious thing. And so you put a little statue, like about this big, mm-hmm. which is very good for podcasts that are short how long in
for
one of
the listeners at home, it's just about that big.
So you've put it somewhere in the pie, and then whoever gets the little statue in their part of the pie
yeah.
gets to wear a hat. Looks like a crown. It's a plastic crown.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. If somebody invited me over and said, we're going to do this thing, it's called the King's Party. And what happens is you go under the table and eat out my pie. I would be very disappointed, I think, to find out.
End up with a bit of marzipan.
With a bit of marzipan, I think.
I don't know who came up with the game. I must have been in like Middle Ages when there was nothing else to do. So, here's a table.
Bored. What do you want to do?
Right, get on
the table.
The table.
All right. My second fact is that Michael J. Fox's middle name is Andrew.
Michael Jandrew.
Michael J. Fox, middle name, Andrew.
I think that's true. I think that's true. I'm going to be bold.
Extraordinary. Alex?
For the listener, I'm looking at Connor's lying
and
face.
And literally rubbing his chin.
It seems very believable to me, isn't it? So particularly with actors, you end up putting weird letters in the middle to make your name different. It's a very sort of American thing to put letters in the middle. Oh, I'm going to say true. Go on then. You got
you're
me.
Same fact.
And my middle name is Michael J. Fox.
That's what the A in AB stands
it's
for.
Cecilia Michael J. Fox. AB.
You're both absolutely correct. His middle name is Andrew. He chose Michael J., like you said, There was an actor in the 40s who was Michael J. something, and he was a big fan of his, so he chose that as his name.
Maybe I'll counterfact, and you can decide whether this is true or not. It's another acronym. So, TASER, not that acronym, but TASER, you know, is in, like, the thing that you do to criminals.
Yeah.
It's very problematic at the moment. Anyway, TASER is an acronym, like laser, so it stands for something. It stands for the Thomas Arthur Smith Electronic Rifle. TASER. Now, there's a lot of weird things about that. Number one weird thing about that is that TASER is normally spelt with a Z. So that Smith is Ziv. Anyway, somebody recently told me this fact. He was like, I'm really interested in acronyms, like, you know, TASER and acronyms. Sounds like Thomas A. Smith Electronic Rifle. I was like, oh, that's fascinating. What does the A stand for in Thomas A. Smith? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, you're interested in one thing, Sambo, but you were like, your curiosity stopped at the
that's
A.
That's so funny.
And so then we both looked it up. So, oh, God, we were both quite excited. You know, what does it stand for? What does it stand for? I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it turns out it stands for nothing.
So it stands for nothing?
Yeah.
Not even Andrew?
Not even Andrew. The A is just, you know, people sometimes just have
so
a letter.
Just so it isn't scissor.
Like,
scissor.
What's the American president who's got the same thing? Harry S. Truman.
Mm.
If you look at what the S stands for like nothing. He just gave himself an S in the middle to sound cool.
That sounds
when
cool.
I think of this whole thing, I always think of Homer J. Simpson.
Yeah.
And the episode where he had to find out what the J stood for, and it was the name J. J A Y. All right. So, Celia, I think we're on to your final fact.
Yes, I'm very excited about this one.
Okay, good.
So, it's a very hot time for bats at the minute. Just so I do them a shout out. Bats give birth upside down.
Oh,
question.
Oh.
What does upside down mean for a bat?
So
because bats obviously spend most of their time with their feet on the tree and their head down.
Yeah.
Does upside down for a bat mean the right way up for us?
So it means that
you've made this philosophical.
I don't know whether Plato ever dealt with this particular question. But
so their head would be towards our floor.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got
so
it.
And then when they give birth, so they give birth and then they go beep, and they catch it, like to stop it from dropping.
If this isn't true, you've really thought out the lie.
I have a parochial fact in return for this. So I presume this is true because the comedian Anna Domini once did a set from the perspective of a bat where she dressed up as a bat
funny.
And made herself upside down and then proceeded to give birth to a smaller bat or something similar. Do you remember this? Did you watch
No,
the
I
set?
Wasn't at that game.
And so, and obviously the smaller bat falls on herself, and it's very funny. It's a very funny piece of physical theatre that I really can't recapture quite on a podcast. So apologies to Anna if I've not captured quite the spectacle that was the incredible piece of art that you were doing there. So I believe that it's possible she just thought that'd be a really funny thing to do. But I think that Anna's the kind of lady who would have done her research on it and got a factually accurate joke on that.
And I think this sounds like a well thought, something that you know and that you really like. So I'm going to say fact as well.
Damn it. I really thought this one would get you.
That is a great piece of information.
But
though.
Please clap for our bat scarer. They're doing all that.
We had a bat in our house once. We
did.
We went out during
I've
the
day. I've
seen
your viral video. I wonder if we're allowed to do
Jesus
a clip of
Brian,
that.
Brian, get out of the kitchen. No, it went into our bedroom and it was like hanging from our blinds upside down, and we were really scared. It came into our house through an upstairs window and then flew down the stairs. We were sat in the dark watching Stranger Things, and my wife was like, Connor, I think there's a bat in here. And I was like, typical Kirsty, scared of the Demogorgon. And then we turned on the light and there was a bat, and we were both like crawling on the ground trying not to get in its way. It was very stressful.
So you do have a phobia.
Apparently
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And that is how I became Batman. I tell no one. My final fact is that more than 99% of banknotes in circulation have traces of cocaine on them.
More than 99%.
More than 99% of banknotes in circulation.
Across every nation on Earth. I'm reckoning if you're going for the Saudi Arabian dollar, perhaps there might be slightly less usage there. I don't know.
I think this may be in the UK. More than 99% of UK banknotes
have traces of cocaine.
Is this cocaine on them?
Is this cocaine that is? I mean, I don't.
Real good shit.
I mean, science-wise, is it something that could be cocaine, or is it actual like cocaine?
I think it's actual cocaine.
To be fair, I don't really use notes. So maybe the whole time I've been sitting on gold.
I really didn't know when you said I don't really use. It was either going to be banknotes or cocaine.
I use neither. I mean, it's interesting. I can't imagine this being true. Is it weed on coins?
Alex, what's your take on this?
Well, it kind of reminds me of a bit earlier in the podcast, which would be weird now if you leave it, you want to cut it out. But it's one of those things where I've heard the statistic before, but with a lower percentage.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to say, because I've heard the statistic before, that is something like that is true. And that I'm told, actually, that it's not because people have rolled up every banknote and every banknote has been rolled up to snort cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually because a small number of notes have been used for that purpose. And then when they go into the ATM machine, automatic telling machines, it spreads through them.
So we should use that as a... that's a good explanation for pandemics as well.
Yeah, for why we should all wear a mask.
I know.
Imagine yourself
wear
as a
wear a mask when you
note.
Do cocaine. Yeah. Remember to...
Did you know that 99% of cocaine has traces of banknote on it?
That's why it's so expensive.
Eventually.
That is so funny. Cocaine can be traced back to money. That's so funny.
So what are we saying? I think you're saying fact.
I'm saying false.
Fiction.
Yeah.
According to the good folk at QI, this is fact.
Oh, my God.
Apparently more than 99% of banknotes have traces of cocaine. So, folks, get your banknotes out. Get them a good lick. Celia, before we go, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jericho Comedy Podcast.
Thanks so much.
Anything you would like to promote? Anything we should be checking out of yours? Twitter, websites, YouTube channel, anything like that?
Obviously, can't wait to get to Edinburgh this year. please come to my show. I'm just on Twitter. It's ABCelia. That's ABCelya. I don't use Instagram or Facebook much, so Twitter is the main thing.
Cool, cool.
And it's ABCelia just across the board. As far as anything to promote, I'll be getting the bus back to London later, and I'll be live tweeting that. So,
so keep an eye out for that. Mm-hmm. Celia, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks so much.
I can't wait
me.
To see you performing at this drive-in in a few hours. It's beginning to look sunny, but I think I might have jinxed it. So there we go. Alex, always a pleasure, buddy.
Cheers,
I will see you in another episode.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. There we go. That was the fantabulous Celia AB. And I can confirm that both Celia and Alex went on to kick ass in what was a very rainy but very, very enjoyable driving gig at Toad. We're doing some more awesome shows over the summer, both at Toad during August and later at Millet's Farm, where we're doing some more super fun drive-in shows. So head to www.jerichocomedy.com for info on all of those shows and more. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like, subscribe, share, rate, all of that. Make sure you also subscribe to our other new podcast, The Dinner Party, where I interview fantastic guests about their dream dinner parties. It's loads of fun. Again, you can find the link in the episode description. And if you can, please support our brilliant partners. You heard from Blackwells earlier in the episode. You can order books from Blackwells online, or if you're in Oxford, pop into the shop, say hello. You can also support another one of our fantastic partners, Oxfordshire Mind, who are doing amazing work. You can find our fundraising page in the podcast description. We've raised over £70,000 for Oxfordshire Mind in the last few years, and it's really helped support their vital work. So any penny you donate helps them do amazing stuff. Until next time, thanks so much for listening to the Jericho Comedy Podcast. We hope to see you again soon. Until the next episode, bye-bye.